Most of us know the background of the book of Jeremiah. Israel has, Israel and Judah have tempted the Lord so much that they're being taken into captivity. And Jeremiah is prophesying during those days. And in verse 16 is a very familiar verse that we all know. As Baptists, we've heard it many times. Thus saith the Lord, stand ye in the ways, and see. And ask for the old paths, where is the good way? And walk therein, and ye shall find rest to your souls. But they said, we will not walk therein. Ask for the old paths. A phrase that we've heard in many Baptist circles, that the idea of saying we need to get back to the old paths will cause amens in about any Baptist crowd. It's how we think. It's how we feel. We know and we understand that since the beginning of time, the world has been getting worse, with a few exceptions, a few periods of time that there were some revivals and some things. But all in all, we see the world in a path of decay. And that that idea translates how we view everything, how we view science. We look at the world as being created perfect and degenerating. Our lost world of science today interprets the world as starting as horrible and getting better. And they'll defend that. They'll defend that the world is getting better so blindly. I debate with them all the time. I lay statistic after statistic in front of them that the world is getting worse. And they'll deny it. They believe through their delusions that it's getting better. But amongst Baptists, it's not hard to find those that would agree we need to go down the old paths. But it would be much harder amongst Baptists, probably, to get people to agree to what are the old paths. What is the old path? What is the Bible talking about when it says the old path? As it's mentioned here as if Israel should just readily know, what is the old path? What is the old way? Oh, we live in times where you'll hear somebody regularly talk about the good old days. What were the good old days? What was good about the good old days? There's a lot of bad things about the good old days. I would not want to go to the hospital in the good old days. I'd rather go to hospital in the days that we live in now. I want to be where all the better tools are. You know, if I work on my car, I tend to pull it in the garage and work on it where the tools are. Occasionally I don't have the best tools, and I'll go up to my friend that's a mechanic and I'll borrow some of his tools, you know. So there's some things that are better about today. And we hear people talking about the old days, but what is this old path specifically that's talked about here? And it says, where is the good way? And they should have known what that was. It was spoken of as something that they should know what it was. What is this path? Is it just something nostalgic? You know, sometimes we hold on to something that's just nostalgic. I get very nostalgic, you know. I'd just assume the carpet be red in here, you know. We get nostalgic. There's good memories that are attached to the past, you know. I live in the house I grew up in. I could stay there forever. We get nostalgic. But what is this old path? It's more than nostalgia. What is this being talked of here? Let's rewind in history a little bit. What is this way? You know, the thing about a way and a path, especially a footpath, it grows over. It grows over if there's not many people walking down it. Grows over with time. Grows over when there's no maintenance to it, and you can't find it. You know, I mentioned that I'm living in the house that I grew up in, and I had paths through the woods. And now my kids have a go-kart, and I thought, well, it'd be fun if they could go down the paths that I went down. So I headed off down there with the weed whacker. The problem is I'm trying to find my path, and there's trees in my path. Whole trees. Right where I used to ride. In just 15 years. Not even identifiable. The path is not even identifiable at all. It doesn't take long. So let's go back in the history here where the path was more delible and find out what is being talked about here in Judges chapter number 2, if you'll turn there. What is the old path? The old way. We could also call it the way of the Lord. What is this way? In Judges chapter 2, and we look at the time that Israel first came to their land of inheritance. We're going back to the beginning of Israel being in their inheritance. In Judges 2 and verse 20, "And the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he said, Because this people hath transgressed against my covenant, which I have commanded their fathers, and have not hearkened to my voice, I also will not henceforth drive out any from before them of the nations which Joshua left when he died, that through them, through those nations, I will prove Israel whether they will keep the way of the Lord to walk therein as their fathers did keep it or not." Said, I'm going to leave these nations here in this land to see, to test them, to try them, to see if they will walk in my way. Will they stay in my way? Now, we've been learning in Sunday school, if you've been in Sunday school, how to identify and use the Bible to define the Bible. Well, if you keep reading, you'll see some of the same words occur in chapter 3. He lists some of these nations, and then in verse 4 of chapter 3, and it says, "And they were to prove Israel by them, to know whether they would hearken to the commandments of the Lord." Which is the same thing he said back in verse 22 and 23, referring to the way of the Lord. So we can see here in this passage that the way of the Lord is walking in the commandments of the Lord. This is what the Bible refers to as the way of the Lord. Walking in the commandments of the Lord, or hearkening to the commandments of the Lord. So, adding up what we've seen so far, Israel has departed from the way of the Lord in the book of Jeremiah. They've departed from the path of the Lord, that good way, that old way. And we read here in the book of Joshua, or in the book of Judges, in their early time there in the land, that God refers to the way of the Lord as the commandments of the Lord. Turning back to, and there's many more commandments than just in Exodus 20, but we can't, for the sake of time, look at all of the commands. But if we turn back to the book of Exodus in chapter number 20. And I want us to look tonight at the Ten Commandments and at the commands of God as a whole as the way of the Lord. That is the old path. The way of the Lord. And I want us to think about that, because oftentimes we look at the commands as something that just outlines the path we shouldn't go down. Because we read the Ten Commandments and they're written in the negative. Thou shalt not. Thou shalt not. Over and over again. Thou shalt not. And so we tend to think of the Ten Commandments as a way not to go. That is describing one of many paths that we shouldn't go down. And we don't often think of it as it describing a way that we should go down. That it is describing a lifestyle and describing a way. Again, sometimes we think the old path or the old way, we get kind of nostalgic. And I can sympathize with that. I drive through little backwoods towns every week, way out in the middle of nowhere, so untouched by the rest of the world, and I think, I could move here. You know, it's bad when you live in Otter Lake and you wish you lived further out in the country. You know, but I drive way out sometimes in the Thumb, out by Yale and Lexington and places like that. I think, I could move out here. I could, you know, buy a farm and never go back into the city again. I could get used to that. I could go back in time. Sometimes we look at the state of the world and we think, you know, I could do that Amish thing. Is that the old path? No, that's not really the old path. In fact, finding the old path has less to do with our occupation. You can get on the old path and keep your occupation most of the time. There may be some exceptions. You can get on the old path and still have electricity. You can get on the old path and still buy your groceries at the grocery store. You know, I have a friend, he walks a mile one way to a spring to draw his water to drink. Milks a goat every morning, grows his own grain that he beats into flour and bakes his own bread and everything else. And I think, man, that's a lot of work. He might enjoy that, he might feel good about that, but that's not necessarily the old path. In fact, you can do all of those things and not be anywhere near the old path. And so, as we look at Exodus 20, I want us to try to look at it in another way. I want us to look at it as it leading us to a way. It is the way of the Lord described. In all of God's Word, we have the way of the Lord described. Exodus 20, verse 1, "And God spake all these words, saying, I am the Lord thy God, which have brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Thou shalt have no other gods before me." And remember that what he said here is, "And God spake all these words." These aren't the words of Moses. These are the words of God. And he said, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me." Now, we as Baptists, we know enough about our Bibles, and we say, well, I don't have any other gods. I mean, that's foolishness. That's something that the Buddhists do. That's something that the Catholics do. We don't have a problem with this as Baptists. Well, God doesn't waste his breath. And he is saying something extremely important to all of our lives. "Thou shalt have no other gods before me." A god was a power. You know, sometimes we think of it as a trinket, but no, a god was a power. A god to somebody in the Old Testament was a power that they recognized as influencing their lives. Now, men got kind of superstitious back then. Now, think about it. We live in a civilized society, so it's hard for us to imagine this, but they went out and they planted fields. And they depended on rain. And they depended on sunshine. And they depended on there not being a blight this year. And they depended on the bugs doing the right thing. The bees coming and pollinating. And the locusts staying away. And as they wished and they hoped and they pleaded for these things. And they watched for these things. They got superstitious. And they began to think that other things were in control of their crop. And other things were in control of their lives. And they began to bow themselves to those powers rather than to God. And it was easy to do because year after year they prayed to God, but that didn't necessarily change whether or not it rained all the time. And so in their flesh they began to believe that other things were bringing blessings in and out of their lives. And we do the same. We begin to submit to other powers, recognize other powers. Tomorrow would normally be a workday Monday. It's a holiday. But typically on a Monday morning, we would wake up and we would head off to work, and there's certain things that we would or wouldn't do. But on a daily basis, do we recognize the power of God? Remember, these commands are describing a way. And in this old-fashioned way, in the old-fashioned way, in the old path, men and women recognize no other power but God, first of all. And this one is foundational to everything else that we read. They recognize no other power. That means on Monday morning, what they did or didn't do depended only upon God. This is the old way. They lived in fear only of the power of God. Not in the power of governments, not in the power of employers, not in the power of anything else. Each day their decisions were based solely on the power of God. This is the old path. If we look at the commands as a way, this was the only force they recognized. They did not submit to the force or the way of their world at that time. You know, the Old Testament talks about a superpower in the last days, which the Bible calls Babylon the Great. And if you remember old Babylon in Genesis chapter 11, the people had begun to band themselves together in a city and in a civilization and band their powers together as if they could almost unify themselves against heaven. And in the last days, there'll be a great superpower as well. And our civilization is readily getting to that place. I mean, we're almost at a place as a society where you almost couldn't live without being a part of modern society. You almost couldn't have a job, you almost couldn't have food without being a part of modern society. So we're very close to modern Babylon, the day that we live. You almost can't live without bowing to the demands of this world. Bowing to its educational demands, its labor force demands, its political demands, its social demands. We're very close to that being the case. But this way, as we read these first couple of commands, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above or that is in the earth beneath or that is in the water under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them nor serve them." We have to, maybe we don't willingly prostrate ourselves to things and bow ourselves to the ground to things, but there are some things in this world we have to bend to. And we have to make our decisions based upon them. But in the old path, the way of the Lord is the way of the commands. This being the first of them, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me." And really, if you look back into history, people reverenced the Lord. They really did. Not like we do today. If you look in the old days, people reverenced God, even lost people. Just in my history, my short life, Dad and I working on a car, we're on a deadline, because you know what? Every auto parts store in a 20-mile radius is closing at noon on Saturday. And we're not going to get a part if we don't get the car fixed till Monday when we got to go to work. That's all over with. Now you can walk into AutoZone anytime you want. Till 9 o'clock at night, 7 days a week. Even the world reverence God. Look on your money. In God we trust. Our forefathers were not going to trust in paper or silver. They recognized and they understood that there was one thing holding their economy together. God. They understood that. There was reverence. If you read some of the old writings, it's unreal to read how people were once upon a time. Reading on, verse number 7, moving to the next command, "And thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless that taketh his name in vain." Again, these commands are in the negative, and they describe a way we shouldn't go. We ought to be careful with the name of the Lord. But they also describe a way that we need to go. The old way, the old path that we need to go, again, was a way of reverence. I used to hear a lot when I was younger, "Don't do that, that's sacrilegious. Don't do that, that's blasphemous." People used to be concerned about those things. And you know, we talk about the good old days. What really was good about the good old days? Was it the economy? The economy wasn't always good. What was it? People had a reverence for God. They were careful with His name. They were careful with anything that was ascribed to His name. That's gone in many ways. Reading on, "Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy." This is one of the few that's written in the positive. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. And this, as we read on here, verse 9, "6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work." This doesn't just describe one event in the week. This describes the pattern of the week of a child of God. And in different countries, you know, in our American culture, you know, we used to hear that song, "Everybody's working for the weekend. Everybody's living for the weekend." And this weekend, if you were on I-75 North, you're down a few brain cells, because I wouldn't be. You know? In our culture, in America, the pattern is not 6 days of work and one day to the Lord. That's not the pattern. It's 5 days and 2 days. 5 days and 2 days. That's the pattern the world lives. My staff wouldn't know what to do with themselves if they didn't have those 2 whole days, if they just served themselves. 2 whole days. 5 days for the man and 2 days for myself. That's the view of the world in America. Now, other countries are different. There are other countries, a lot of them don't work as much as we do. Australia, common work week is 4 days. 4 days and 3 days for myself. It's different in different places. But this is the pattern that the world has set, and to a certain degree, it has left its tracks upon our own hearts. To a certain degree, it has left its impact upon us. And we sometimes think that way. But this is not the pattern or the way of the Lord. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Again, we mentioned how that some time ago nothing was open on the Sabbath. It was a different way. And so when you think about the good old days, I want you to think about these commands that we've been reading. People lived lives according to these things. 6 days shalt thou do all thy labor and do all thy work, but the seventh is the Sabbath to the Lord thy God. In it thou shalt not do any work, thou, nor thy son, nor thy daughter, nor thy manservant, nor thy maidservant, nor thy cattle, nor thy stranger that is within thy gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heaven and earth, the sea, and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day. Wherefore the Lord bless the Sabbath day and hallowed it. This is probably one of the oldest ways of the ways of the Lord. It is quite possibly the oldest command, because it predates man. It doesn't predate man completely. Man was there on the sixth day, and the seventh day God rested. It's quite possibly the oldest command. It was there before, "Don't eat of this tree." Verse 12, another one in the positive, "Honor thy father and thy mother." As I look at this command, the idea of honoring anybody is foreign to our society. I can remember taking government class in high school, and Bill Clinton was elected. And we were just like, we were appalled. Our government teacher said, "You're going to call him Mr. President. We don't like him, but we will respect that office. I don't want to hear anybody calling him Clinton. You call him President Clinton in this class." That's gone. There was a time that you called police officer, not a cop or things like that. The idea of honoring anybody is gone in our society. Honor thy father and mother. As we look at these things, look back into history and let these things define a way in your mind. Let these things define a path. The old way is a way in which children honored their parents, that their days would be long upon the land. And some of these last ones, the Lord himself goes into more detail in the New Testament. Verse 13, "Thou shalt not kill." It's written in the negative. Most Baptists would read that and go, "Well, I've never done that, so okay." But the Lord goes into more detail in Matthew chapter number 5 in the Sermon on the Mount. And as we begin to look at this in a positive way, remember, these things are describing the ways of God. And so if we look at the positive side of that, if the negative is thou shalt not kill, the positive side of that is that life has great dignity and great sanctity. They honored life. I'm always struck when I go to military funerals, because military people know how to honor life. It always strikes me. And every time I'm at a military funeral, I think, the next time I do a funeral, I have got to do better at honoring life. It is a thing to be respected. It is a thing that is a gift of God, and it is only to be in His hands. Life is sacred from birth to death. It's sacred. Older generations respected life. I don't know. I don't remember who I was talking to last week. Someone about a funerals down south. Down south, they still will line the streets. People will stop and get out of their cars as a procession goes by. There's respect to life. Genesis 1:28, one of the other earlier commands, one of the other earlier ways of that are laid out for us. In Genesis 1 and ...28, it speaks for itself. This is one of the first commands, one of the first ways. "And God blessed them, and God said unto them, Be fruitful, and multiply, and replenish the earth, and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth." Life is sacred. From birth till death. There are things that have creeped into churches, creeped into our society, that should not be there. Life is sacred. It's not to be toyed with. It's not to be messed with. Jesus in speaking about this verse 13 here, speaks about our love for one another. And he says that we're guilty of murder if we harbor hatred down in our hearts. And so we see that the old way not only is all of these things that we've mentioned before, but it's a way of love towards one another. Verse 14, again in the negative, thou shalt not commit adultery. What is the positive of that? What is the opposite of that? A very holy, sanctified life. Well, that's difficult in the world we live in. Jesus takes it a step further in Matthew 5 and verse 27 that any one that thinks upon a woman has committed adultery already in his heart. So if we're looking at the commandments as a way of God, as a path, it was a path of great personal dignity, of great private integrity. Oh, that way is almost gone in our world today. Very difficult in our world today. It's a constant effort. Reading on, verse 15, thou shalt not steal. Again, it's presented in the negative, thou shalt not steal. What is the opposite of that? You're to live a life that we don't owe anybody. You know, there's a proverb that's always taken out of context, and it says, owe no man anything. That doesn't mean you can't borrow. There's plenty of examples of borrowing throughout the Bible. Jesus himself had no place to lay his head, so what did he do every night? Well, if he wasn't in the woods, he borrowed a place to stay. He borrowed food. There's plenty of examples of borrowing in the Bible. That's not what it means. It means when you leave the deal, whatever deal it may be, you don't owe him anything. You know, when I look back on the older generations, they were a generation that paid what they owed. They were a generation that did not want a deal. They didn't want a deal from somebody. That is not the Christian way. That is not the biblical way to always get a deal. Think about it for a moment. A deal always comes at the cost of somebody else. Real men were men that didn't want anything that they didn't work for. That's gone in our society today. Everybody wants a deal. Everybody wants something for nothing. Everybody's a price haggler. There was a generation that didn't want it if they didn't earn it. Would have no part of it if they didn't earn it. There's a proverb, Proverbs 15:27. Turn there. This is a good one to check your heart by. It'll stab you if you're not careful. Proverbs 15:27. He that is greedy of gain troubleth his own house. That's the negative side of it. We know that that's wrong to be greedy of gain. Here's the positive side of it. He that hateth gifts shall live. The kind of person that hates free stuff. He hates feeling like he owes somebody. He hates that feeling of being a debtor, and he won't accept it. He doesn't like gifts. Gifts make him feel awkward. Gifts make him feel strange. That was a real man. That was a real person. The Bible says wealth gotten by vanity will surely disappear. They didn't want it if they didn't work for it. They didn't want anything for free. You know, I think of the story in 2 Samuel when David went to buy the threshing floor where the ark was at. And he went to the king that owned that property and he said, I want to buy that where the ark is sitting. And he says, you can have it. And David said, no, I'm going to pay for it. I will not take it for free. I'm going to pay for it. The king said, no, just take it and take the oxen and everything that's there. The king said, no. Nope, I'm going to pay. This is what real men are. In Luke 3, verse 14, Jesus told the soldiers there that had gotten saved. Now the soldiers, the Roman soldiers were some of the wicked, they were the wicked thugs of the day. They were the mobsters of the day. They were the enforcers of the laws. They were crooked. History tells all kinds of stories of things that they did to hold down prices and all kinds of different things that these guys did. It's unbelievable. But Jesus tells them in Luke 3:14, after they came to the understanding of the teachings of the Lord Jesus Christ, and they said, what do we do? And he said, be content with your wages. So the positive side of thou shalt not steal is contentment. Be content. Owe no man anything. You know, and as we look back over history, this is how people were. You know, if you watch old John Wayne movies or things like that, this is the old way. It's a way of working hard. And in fact, the harder they had to work to earn something, the better they felt about it. Well, that's not our culture today. We've got a culture of the give me's. Give me this. Give me that. You owe me this. You owe me that. It's unbiblical. It's un-American. Unfortunately, it's become the new American. That's what it is. But the old way is a way of contentment. It's a way of hard work. It's a way that hates handouts, hates gifts. This is the positive side of the commandments, the way, the old path. Verse 16, thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. The old way is a pro-neighbor way. The old way is a way of mercy, neighborly love. It's a way of honesty. There's not much you can count on in our world today, but you can count on dishonesty. Dishonesty in advertising, dishonesty in contracts, dishonesty. I mean, that's all you can count on. Way of honesty, way of integrity. And again, all of these things, these aren't things we need to get a different job, a different zip code to do. We don't need to have horses and buggies to do these things. We can start right away. We can start right away with the old path. That's the problem. See, the old path is, in a way, far more difficult than just going and getting a different job and unhooking your electricity. It's far more involved than that. There's a lot more personal commitment than that. It's not something you can just once do. It's a lot more. Notice the next one, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox, nor his ass, nor anything that is thy neighbor's. And your neighbor doesn't just mean the guy that lives next to you. It means anybody you come in contact with. You think about that. Again, our world is a world of covetousness. I mean, we're so ingrained in a world of covetousness, I'm not sure I know how to live without it. I don't know how to market to my customers without appealing to their covetousness. I mean, when I think about that, how do I market to them without appealing to their covetousness? Do I flash product before them? Do I talk to them about the great deal they'll get so they can spend their money on other things? We're so ingrained in covetousness, it's a way of life. That's what advertising is. I don't know how to do business without it. It is so ingrained in our world today. It is a way and a world of covetousness. It's where we are. We do it, and we don't even know we do it. We don't even know we do it. You know, if you're like me, all we really watch is PBS. I can get to watching PBS. I love to watch cooking shows. I can get to watching a cooking show, and I go, "Well, that's a really nice chopping knife." I think, oh, man, I'm just watching PBS, for crying out loud. There's no commercials, you know? And then they zoom in on that Weber grill, and I go, oh. It's the way of our world. So much so that I'm not sure our path is so grown over that I don't know if we can see it anymore. You know, and this is what our text verse said back in Jeremiah chapter number 6, if we turn back there and look at it again. He said, "Stand ye in the ways and see. Stand and look at all the ways and all the paths and ask for the old path." In other words, you're going to have somebody help you find it. It's not well traveled. It's fading in the brushes. It's not well marked out. Stand in the ways. Stop for a moment. Find somebody and ask. Ask for the old paths. Wherein is the good way? And walk therein. And it'll pay off. And ye shall find rest for your souls. But they said, "We will not walk therein." When they saw it, when they asked about it, they looked at it, they counted the cost, and they said, I don't know if I can do that. Not sure I can go down that path. There's a lot of things about it. Again, when we speak of this old path, we're not talking about the path to heaven. That's not what we're talking about. We're just talking about the life of a believer. Notice what it said there. "And ye shall find rest." This is a path for somebody who's looking for rest to their soul. It's not the path to heaven. That's only of grace. That's the only way. It's not the path to riches, though some may find riches on that path. It's not the path to riches. It's a path to rest. Jesus said in the book of Matthew, chapter 11, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and ye shall find rest to your souls." Again, we said that many people today would chime and would amen to the fact that we need to find the old path. There's a lot of funny ideas about what that is. Maybe you think it's the path of the generation just before us. And in many cases, the generation before us did a lot of things good. Might have done a lot of things wrong. But there's a path laid out in the Word of God, how we're to live, things that we're to do. And if we look at the commandments not just as a negative, but as a way. As a way. You know, when you read through the Proverbs and you see all of those things, you can begin to see a way of life. You can begin to see how God deals with things. And you can really begin to see what is the way of God. Not just as a term, but how God walks. You can begin to see the way of God. How does God deal with things? How does God do things? How does He walk? What is His path? And you can read through the Proverbs, and you can read through the commandments. And in Exodus 20, after the commandments come, in Exodus 21, come the judgments, which are kind of the commandments played out. And you can kind of see those judgments of based on the commands, what would you do in this situation? Or if you had a servant that did this, or if your cattle did that, or if you built a house and then this happened, and there's all these judgments. And you can begin to see the way that God would have us to be and have us to walk. And it's very simple. Again, it's more than nostalgia. It's more than just doing what, you know, Grandpa did. You know, there's a lot of, as I have filled in at some other churches, and there's a lot of weird things people do. Why they do it? Well, Grandpa did that, you know. There's a lot of churches that Grandpa pastored so many years ago, and they've just continued to do what Jesus told the Pharisees in the New Testament. They said to Jesus, "Why do you transgress the tradition of the elders?" And Jesus said, "Why do you by your traditions transgress the law of God?" Tradition is not the same as the old path. Not by any means. The old path and the old way is far more than that. If you look at these things and you look back in time, you can see what a departing. Oh, how we've come so far, just in my lifetime, in these things. I want to go back in time. You know, we don't need to move out on the farm to do that. In a lot of ways, we can just get diligent with the things of God. Fearing the Lord, reverencing the Lord. There's a lot of things just in our personal lives we've gotten slacked in. We get loose with our reverence. We get loose with a lot of things. Covetousness. We get loose with the Sabbath day. We get loose with gossip. We get loose with a lot of things. Ask for the old path. Do you need rest in your life? Are you weary? Do you just need a change? Ask for the old path. It's hard to see. It's grown over. But it's simpler than you think it is. Ask for the old paths. We'll stop there and be dismissed with a song.